Call the Tax Committee to order for March 17th, 2015. Senator Franson, Senate File 1623. We have the amendment in our packet.
Yes.
And Senator Franson, do you have a A1 amendment that...
Yes, Mr. Chair, and it's a technical amendment.
And Senator Rest would move the A1 amendment. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A1's adopted. Is the
Thank
bill
you,
in
Mr.
the order
Chair.
That you would like, Senator Franson?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So Senate File 1623 does three things dealing with the estate tax exclusion. Number one, it would increase the Minnesota's estate tax exemption to fully match the federal exemption by 2019, so it would speed up the current law to get to the federal exclusion of $5 million plus by 2018. Number two, it would also change the Minnesota's estate tax it would speed up the small business and farm deduction by 2018. So that by then, those small businesses and farms will also qualify for the $5 million. So it's a wash, essentially. There's no impact there. And number three, it would also deal with the way Minnesota's estate tax may be computing beginning deaths in 2019, also known as the portability of the exclusion for spouses between spouses. So basically, if your spouse dies first after 2019 and does not use his or her entire federal exclusion, a portion of that amount can transfer to you and be applied toward your exclusion upon your death. So those are the three main pieces of the bill. I know you're hearing a few other similar bills this morning, and I ask for your support and stand for any questions.
Well, Senator Franson, it looks like you've got a pretty all-encompassing bill here. Did you walk through the phase-in so that by 2019 we would have the comparable exclusion is what the federal government has now?
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. The proposed exclusion is in 2015 is $2 million. In 2016, it would be $3 million. 2017, $4 million. 2018, $5 million. And then by 2019, it would match the federal exclusion, which I believe is $5.43 million.
And Senator Franson, one other question. Is there a mechanism in here for that to continue along with the federal exclusion, or is that something that future legislators would be contemplating?
Mr. Chair, this bill does not add any inflation mechanisms to it, so it would stay at the federal exclusion as it is today.
Okay, thank
you. And Council can also confirm that.
Ms. Pollock.
Mr. Chair and members, on 1.23 of the bill, the reference to Section 2010C3 is the reference to the Internal Revenue Code, which includes there the automatic inflator for the $5 million exclusion amount. So by referencing that federal code, we would have an inflator for the Minnesota state tax beginning in 2019.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Pollock.
Thank you.
Senator Rest.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Franson. Can you tell me where, the bill as introduced had a much higher price tag, and the bill as amended has been reduced considerably, although it's still not of no consequence. What changes in the amendment? I'm trying to go back and forth here that was able to reduce the cost.
And Senator Rest, maybe we'll ask Ms. McQuay first.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. McQuay.
Sure.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I believe the revenue estimate that you are referring to is the revenue estimate for the November forecast. At the February forecast, there was a significant decrease in the estate tax, and so the revenue estimate, though it is reflected based on the A1 amendment is technical. The change is purely due to the forecast.
I see.
Change.
Thank you.
And
I was curious because I didn't see much change in the amendment, actually, but there's a huge change in the
And Senator Rest and Ms. Pollack, so the revenue estimate that we have, the March 16th, is accurate?
It's February forecast.
February forecast.
Mr. Chair and members, the the March 16th is updated for the February forecast.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. You.
Questions, members? Anyone else wish to testify on Senate File 1623? Anything else, Senator Franzen?
No, Mr. Chair, that's all.
I think, Senator Franzen, we have a full agenda of estate tax bills today. We've heard a lot of estate tax bills in the previous years. We're pretty well versed on it. Appreciate your effort. Looks like a pretty all-encompassing. You deal with portability and bringing up to the federal exclusion level. Seeing nothing else, any closing comments?
Yes. No, I would say I ask for your support. I know you have quite a list of other bills, and I think we all have a little similarity in our approaches, so I think you'll have a good menu of options to deal with the estate tax this year.
Thank you very much, Senator Franzen. Chair, Senator Rest.
No, go ahead.
Chair lays Senate File 1623 as amended over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Franzen. Senator
Rest. I would be interested as testifiers come forward on the other bills that we have to have their comments on which ones they either not just that they cost more or less or whatever, but which ones they think the policy is more doable or better, whatever you want to call it, but that they think is the most workable and in going forward in terms of the similarities of what we should adopt. And the testifiers seem to be very, if you look at the list, they're very knowledgeable in this area, so I would be very interested in hearing their comparisons if they've had a chance to look at the other bills.
And
just a request.
Senator Rest, we'll kind of ask the Senator Gazelka question of what their priorities are and which ones they think work best.
Yeah, that one. That would be good.
Kind of our standard question for the year, I think. Senator Nelson and Senator Coonan have the same bill. So we're going to hear both of them at the same time, and the testifiers are very similar. So Senator Nelson and Senator Coonan, and while they're coming to the table, members, if you could review the committee minutes for March 12, 2015.
Move approval.
Senator Senjum moves approval of the March 12 minutes. Anything else, members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Welcome, Senator Nelson and Senator Coonan. And Senator Nelson, you're on number two, so why don't we start with you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. It is great to be in front of you today, and I know you have a lot on your plate. The bill I bring before you today is very similar to Senator Franzen's, which bill you just heard. However, Senate File 743 jumps that exclusion to conform to the feds. And it also strikes the Minnesota-specific estate tax filing requirement and requires that a Minnesota return must be filed if a federal return is filed. So it actually conforms to the federal tax subtraction for purposes of calculating the Minnesota taxable estate. The federal exclusion amount is $5 million annually adjusted for inflation. And so for this 2015, the amount, of course, is $5.43 million, and this bill would conform to that. And I think that's the long and short of that bill. Mr. Chair, would you like me to introduce my testifier?
I think we'll let Senator Coonan speak, and then we'll bring the testifiers up. Senator Coonan.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this bill is the same as Senator Nelson's. It does the things she talked about. It fully conforms to the federal estate tax exclusion, which is now $5.43 million for tax year 2015. It repeals the qualified small business and farm property exclusion that's in current law, because if this were to go into law, that wouldn't be necessary anymore. And it adopts the federal portability rule that allows a surviving spouse to use unused portions of their spouse's exclusion, and requires that a Minnesota estate tax return be filed only if a federal estate tax return is needed. And the bill adds inflation to the exclusion amount each year. And if you look at on page 4 of the bill, starting with line 4.11, you'll see the tax rate amounts there. And first of all, I should add that the way this is calculated is that it takes the federal exclusion and just eliminates that from the possible Minnesota amount that is taxable. So then, which would be the $5.43 million. So after that amount, it starts with the amounts above that, and up to $7.1 million is taxed at 13%. And then if you go down there to line 4.15, you'll see, and through line 4.21, you'll see the breakout amounts and the percent tax on those amounts. So, for example, on line 4.15 would be over $7.1 million, but not over $8.1 million, is 13.6%. And the $923,000 you see there is the 13% on the amount not over $7,100. So it just keeps building as it moves up as it's calculated.
Senator Coonan, so am I understanding that right? That would be an automatic adjustment mechanism that would keep it in place in line with what the federal exclusion is? Is that what I heard you say?
Yes. Maybe Ms. Pollack can comment too, but it's my understanding when I read this that this exclusion amount adjusts along with the federal exclusion as that goes up with inflation.
Okay, Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Any questions of the authors, members? And I don't know if you have an opinion, but maybe you guys would want to join us at the table, and we'd leave the testifier table for testifiers, and you can just be part of the discussion.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yep, Mr. Chairman, that sounds good.
No questions from members. Let's move to the testifiers. Mr. Allen, Mr. Brommelkamp, and Ms. Cadoon.
Mr. Chairman, you say these bills are exactly alike.
Senator, yes,
exactly.
The same bills.
Okay.
Let's start at the top. Ms. Allen.
Chairman Skoe, Senator Nelson, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony in support of Senate File 743. I'm Dr. Dana Allen Tully, a partner in Garland Dairy Farms with my parents and brother at Eota, Minnesota. Garland Dairy started with 40 cows when my parents bought the farm from my grandparents in 1976. Since then, our farm has expanded to include my brother and myself with the help of 43 full-time employees. We are the second largest employer in the Eota area behind our school system. Senate File 743 is about ensuring a healthy, sustainable agriculture sector for generations in Minnesota, for future generations in Minnesota. Today, land prices are $8,000 to $10,000 an acre. Dairy cattle are $1,900 a head. A planter is $10,000 per row, and a new tractor is anywhere from $130,000 to $250,000. The additional burden of estate taxes could very likely deplete our working capital and ability to operate at the untimely death of my parents. This may have an unintended consequence of putting our 43 dedicated employees out of work as well. The random nature of death requires us to manage my parents' estate to make sure the business succeeds for future generations. This imposes significant transactional costs annually for us to hire accountants, lawyers, estate planners, and appraisers. These are resources that could be spent on growing and improving our business. But without this focus, my brother and I will not continue to operate our business after our parents pass. For the last 20 years, my parents have been working with consultants to ensure the farm they worked hard to grow continues to be successful after we have lost them. I urge you to provide certainty to Minnesota's farmers and future generations by supporting Senate File 743. Thank you for your attention.
And Ms. Allen, as a farm, you would qualify for the current small business and farm exclusion that's $5 million an individual. And this proposal does raise that somewhat.
Yes. Allows it to increase on inflationary rate. But it also provides us certainty so that as we plan in years coming forward, that we know.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gazalka.
I'm thinking if we're this bill adds portability and both parents are alive, it's $10
million. Yeah, and I don't think this bill, does this bill have portability?
It does, yes.
This bill does have portability, yeah. So it's $10 million then, yes. Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I would just like to welcome Ms. Allen to our committee. She's the partner in Garland Dairy Farms, which I think I've mentioned before in this committee, but it was designated Minnesota's 2010 Milk Producer of the Year because of their proven commitment to the dairy industry, managing their farm for future generations, and being active in their local community. Garland Dairy is a unique partnership between two very dedicated families in the Eota area. And I'm just very thrilled that Dana was able to make the time to come up here today. It's a big operation that they operate, and I'm very thrilled that she's able to come and provide the testimony today about why it's necessary that these estate plans have more than a one-year shelf life. Estate plans don't have one-year shelf lives, but as we continue to change our laws, then those estate plans need to change on an annual basis, which is why I'm so supportive of why I've authored the bill, which jumps immediately to federal conformity. And my hope is with a budget surplus that this is I know that this committee has moved in that direction and has wanted to move in that full conformity direction, and it has it on a phased-in basis now. My hope is that in light of the nearly $2 billion budget surplus that we can jump to this full conformity now and provide that certainty that our producers need. Thank you.
Senator Nelson, you did mention that we have been making progress on moving toward what the request is today, and hopefully we're able to make progress, whether it's incremental or all the way, we'll find out.
Thank you.
Anything else, members, for Ms. Allen? Mr. Brommelkamp.
Thank you, Chairman Sko and members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Mike Brommelkamp. I'm a principal with Olson Thielen, a mid-sized Twin Cities certified public accounting firm. However, I hope I speak for all the practitioners that were asked to testify and weren't able to come because they're busy doing tax compliance work right now. My firm works with many small and medium-sized privately owned, family-owned companies and their owners. My firm provides a wide range of services, including planning and compliance services in the areas of the income tax, the state tax, and the gift tax, as well as business valuation. I'm a longtime member and volunteer with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and with the Minnesota Society of Certified Public Accountants. My comments will be brief. Maybe Ann would appreciate that. I speak in enthusiastic support of federal conformity, in particular in the areas of the estate tax thresholds and in portability. The federal threshold was raised to $5 million in 2012 and is now indexed to inflation. As a practitioner, I can tell you that this threshold difference frustrates not only those of us who are CPA practitioners, but the Minnesota residents that you represent who come to us for guidance and counsel. Only five states have a threshold less than $2 million. The difference alone is a tremendous learning challenge for us, for our clients to understand what's going on. In many cases, the costs of compliance can exceed the ultimate tax to be paid by particularly the smaller states. And these changes are needed to the Minnesota threshold to facilitate transfers of family businesses like Garland and make our state more competitive and able to retain and attract the entrepreneurs and retain our retirees. Policies really should create incentives not to relocate upon retirement or to invest outside of Minnesota. In particular, we're concerned about the baby boom mountain that's in front of us, where there's going to be a large number of individuals that are going to be able to transfer their businesses in the coming years here, and the incentives in place right now, because of the differences in the exemptions, causes them to look at residency choices as they approach retirement. So with that, I'll conclude my comments and certainly stand ready for any questions.
Questions, members? Senator Sanjim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bonkamp, you know, we don't have to walk very far down our local streets before we hear about somebody talking about this issue and the change of residency. Few of us ever sit in an accounting office and have an opportunity to, you know, listen to that kind of conversation. But is how real is this change of residency issue from a perspective of an accountant?
Mr. Bromelkamp.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee. From a business standpoint, I can speak only for the practitioners that are in my firm, and I've got 20 principals in our firm, so we think we represent a pretty good brush. I can tell you that I deal with it on a weekly basis. I'm enthusiastic as an individual that I appreciate the quality of life we have here in Minnesota, and I want to be here, and I promise you that I will be here. But it becomes increasingly difficult for me to convince clients when they look at the numbers that they shouldn't be considering relocation. I have had that discussion yesterday with a client. I just got back from out of town trip, and they wanted to talk to me, and they're trying to consider what, you know, we are filing their 1040 this year, and they looked at the bottom line, and they said, well, what do we have to do with our estate plan, and so on and so forth. And it just gets increasingly difficult to convince somebody that they shouldn't be considering relocation. And obviously there are a lot of other things that go into these decisions. These are not dollars and cents decisions all the time. But it becomes increasingly difficult for me and the other thousands of CPA practitioners in the state to convince our clients that they shouldn't be considering it. And it is very real, specifically to your question.
Thanks. Anything else, members?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Nelson.
Well, while I don't sit in a CPA office to see this growing concern, I can tell you that I do something that many of us do in this body, which is every year we take that list of registered voters and we door knock our districts. And it was amazing to me each year I would come upon more and more people who I knew quite well, knew they'd been on the list of registered voters the year prior, and then I would say something like, oh, well, there must be some mistake here. I see you're not listed on the list of registered voters anymore. And they would look kind of sheepishly and then say, well, you know, we have moved our domicile to somewhere else, and we're still here in Rochester for part of the year, but now we're just domiciling where our, you know, condo was for the summer. And eventually it got to where I didn't ask that question anymore, because so many residents that were paying taxes in our great state are now domiciling in other states. And it's something that I think we as elected officials who do door knock and visit our constituents, the incidence of that is growing, and it's significant. And so just to add further testimony to the growth in people choosing to not spend their latter years in Minnesota because of our estate tax.
And, you know, I think we'll get the department to come with some data, because I think if we look at the number of taxpayers in the fourth tier and the returns that came in the last year, the numbers don't show a real large exodus. Now, there will be examples, of course, where people are moving, because people move all the time. And, you know, so we'll get the department to see what the tax incident study and what the other studies show with regard to that movement. I don't think we're going to see quite as large of impact as, you know, as you might see, but we'll get some data so we have that in front of us, besides just, you know, individuals' examples. Senator Gazalka.
And to that point, Mr. Chair, I think part of it is it takes a while to, if you're going to make a transition out, to sell your place, to make sure you're getting the right price, you know, so we may see it over time. But I'm hoping that the testifier will stay. I see he's not on the testifying for the estate gift tax bills, but I'd like to have you stick around in case we have some questions related to those as well.
Oh, the rest provision. Okay. Well, if you wouldn't mind, sir.
Certainly.
Senator Thompson.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair. I essentially was going to make the point that Senator Gazalka made.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Cadoon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I thank so much the authors that brought these bills forward on federal conformity on the estate tax threshold. We think these are very important changes, as the previous testifiers have mentioned. We've been hearing Minnesota's been becoming more and more of a tax outlier in this area. Minnesota's one of 14 states that still have an estate tax. As was mentioned, other states are increasing to that federal estate tax threshold. Most recently, Maryland and New York. New York under Governor Cuomo made that change last year to move to the federal estate tax threshold. So as mentioned, as Minnesota does not make this change, we're becoming more and more of a tax outlier. And we're hearing, as we go around the state meeting with our business members, we're hearing from many CPAs, financial planners, attorneys all across Minnesota on the big uptick, frankly, in their businesses and conversations they're having with their clients on this issue. And what seems to be happening is when they're looking, as a lot of people are hitting these retirement ages, as they're looking at the future, the estate tax really seems to be that tipping point for many taxpayers on making that difficult decision a lot of times to then end up relocating out of state. So we think this is very real. I think when you look at the data, because it does not necessarily impact a lot of taxpayers, and Senator Gazalka mentioned, a lot of times these take years, I think, before data is probably going to catch up with this. So I don't think you're necessarily going to see it in data immediately. Those 2013 tax increases, for example, were retroactive, so you don't really necessarily see any impact in 2013 on any of those tax changes that occurred. But we think this is real, and we're hearing, as I said, greatly around the state. I'll mention just some issues regarding or support for other bills. That was mentioned, portability, we think will be a great change. The more we can align with the federal on these tax requirements, the better for Minnesota. As mentioned, it's fairly very costly for individuals to plan for the estate tax purposes. So if you can align more with the federal, the better for our residents in the state. And so we have very strong support, and thank you so much for bringing these bills forward.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Questions, members? Thank you. And Mr. Brommelkamp, if you'd be willing to stick around, there might be some questions for you as we move
Absolutely.
Forward here today. Mr. Peterson and Mr. Hickey.
Nelson.
Oh, Mr. Nelson and Mr. Hickey. I'm sorry. All those Scandinavian names. Welcome, Mr. Hickey.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business, Minnesota. And a lot of you are familiar with our group. We have 13,000 small businesses and farmers across the state. And I think we're likely the most affected group when it comes to this tax. Virtually all our members are privately held, and many of them struggle with this issue as they try to pass on a tradition in commerce or farming to family members. Appreciate you holding a State Tax Tuesday here, Mr. Chairman. A lot of great ideas. We feel very optimistic that some good things are going to happen this year, and appreciate your interest in this issue. We strongly support both Senator Conan's and Senator Nelson's bills. It'd be so nice to put this issue behind us and finally achieve federal conformity. So if a taxpayer didn't have federal liability, wouldn't have state liability, they wouldn't have federal. And it would just be a nice moment of clarity to achieve this. It's been a long time coming. We did the carve out on a farm and a small business, and you've tried to help on that, Mr. Chairman, and other members have too. Yeah, but this would take care of that. There are some problems with that law. There are some complications with that law. And if we could achieve one of these two bills, we would strike that law, as you know, because we wouldn't have the entanglements with inability to put a corporate or business checking account into the mix, problems people are having with tenant farming, problems people are having trying to rent out their farm, and all that would go away, and we'd have a much simpler situation. So even though that was significant progress, this far supersedes it. And I guess I'm going to get up here again in a few minutes, Mr. Chairman, but your ideas on portability are really needed also. But we just strongly support finally achieving full federal conformity on the exemption and joining all the other states who have done that. And it would be a great moment for family-held businesses and farms.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Questions, members? Mr. Nelson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Peter Nelson. I'm the Director of Public Policy for Center of the American Experiment, and I want to thank you for bringing these bills forward today. As an organization, we've been very concerned over the past few years that our tax policy is leading people to avoid moving to this state and driving people out of this state. And so I want to just touch on some of the things that I've uncovered over the years in investigating this issue of whether people are actually coming and going, and either not coming in the state or leaving the state. I really dug into this issue quite a bit. And when it comes to the estate tax, this is a real difficult issue to look at because there really is no data on wealth migration out there to track whether people are moving into or out of a state. Really, the only data on wealth that we have comes from the Federal Reserve's Consumer Finance Survey. And otherwise, the IRS does track some wealth data periodically, but it's not a consistent tracking, so that's hard to look at. So we're always kind of stuck with looking at proxies like income taxes and whether people with whether people with higher incomes are leaving the state. And even then, the data is very sparse as far as being able to track a lot of this stuff and to do those meaningful studies that we really hope we could do. And so saying that, I want to first express the fact that we really have to, because of that lack of data, we have to really pay close attention to the CPA that was speaking before us, the people who are on the ground looking at these issues in the state of Minnesota and hearing from the people and advising our wealthy citizens here. But I do want to point you to a study that I released last week, and I know you all received one in your box. I'm not sure if you have it here with you. But one of the things that I did a few weeks ago is I decided to look at, okay, what's the one piece of data we do have is federal estate tax collections across every state. And we can look at the estate tax collections per return. And so we can see the size of the average estate tax collection per state. And what I then did, after looking at that, I collected that, and I looked at, okay, well, so let's divide up the states. Let's look at the states that have a state estate tax, and let's look at states that don't have an estate tax. So let's divide all of the collections and returns into those two separate states, and let's see whether we have more federal estate tax collections in states that don't have an estate tax. And when you look at before the federal estate death tax credit was repealed, and as that was being phased out, we see that when you look at a state with an estate tax that had that estate tax in 2012, I picked 2012, and it was essentially the same. I've got a graph here that basically shows estate tax collections in states with no estate tax versus states with an estate tax were essentially the same. Collection per return, essentially the same, all the way through, even as the exemption amount increased at the federal level. This is 2003. They're all the same. And then right about 2009, they start to break apart. And in my mind, that show gives us some substantial evidence that people started making choices years ago on where they're going to live and where they're going to die. And we're seeing right now that it's actually moved apart where in states that don't have an estate tax, federal estate tax collections per return is about $544,000. Now, compare that with states that do have an estate tax. It's $321,000. We're now seeing a substantial difference. That's nearly a 70% increase. And that's a substantial change from before the state death tax credit was phased out. And I think that really shows us that people are dying with more wealth now in states that don't have an estate tax. And I want to make one final comment, which another thing I noticed when I looked at our estate tax study, our Minnesota Department of Revenue's estate tax study. One interesting thing in that study was the point that when you look at the farm deduction, it became very clear that our farms represented a substantial portion of our assets that would have been subject to the estate tax. And it was about 10%. And that's substantially higher than you would see at the federal level. And there's good reasons why Minnesota's farms should be higher relative to the federal level. Obviously, we have many more farms in this state than nationally. And we have higher incomes from those farms. We have higher farm property values. However, it doesn't justify that difference. And that suggests to me that people with wealth have moved out of Minnesota, and those with movable assets have moved, and farms that are obviously immobile have stayed here. And they now represent a larger portion of our estates for wealthy individuals in the state of Minnesota. So I think I just wanted to highlight those two data points, because those are two data points that I've uncovered that I think really speak to the fact that people do, in fact, move to avoid this estate tax. And with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
And Mr. Nelson, so the lines are diverging starting in 2009. And there are other explanations for that besides people moving. I mean, in 2009, there was an ongoing debate nationally about estate tax levels. Perhaps people started doing more estate planning. I mean, there's all kinds of things that could explain the divergence beside moving. You'd have to delve into that a little deeper and see what exactly happened there. And, you know, maybe we're able to accomplish some of that as we move forward this year. Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, yes, there can be some other explanations. However, I think the strongest explanation is the fact that back in 2004, 2005, when people realized, okay, this is now the current state of the law, they started making choices. And, you know, when you think, just look at the common sense issue, when you look at the common sense comparison between someone who's got two houses, maybe even three houses, they might have a house in Florida, they might have a house in Colorado, and they might have a house here, it becomes very, very easy to change that domicile for that type of individual. And I think that's what we're seeing. I mean, even the House Research Memo or report on this issue speaks to how easy it is to change your domicile for someone who already has a second home or a third home. And I do believe that people started taking that opportunity once the state death tax credit left.
And then we'll look and see what impact that has on our economy. I mean, you know, Minnesota's economy is quite strong, so, you know,
yes,
see what the impacts
absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Sure. And that's one of the other big problems with the estate tax. I truly believe that the state estate tax diminishes all of our other revenue sources. There's all sorts of different ways that it can diminish revenue, even in addition to people leaving the state and taking their incomes to another state, reducing their consumption in this state. There's other ways that tax avoidance can reduce income tax revenues. For instance, setting up a family business partnership can transfers income or transfers those assets to someone at a lower income level usually, in general. And so that sort of reduces our income level. Just gifting assets usually gifts those assets to someone at a lower income level, and that then is subject to a lower income tax rate. So all of these different tax avoidance strategies to avoid the estate tax generally lead to lower income tax revenues and can often lead to, if you're moving, lower sales tax revenues and lower property tax revenues.
Sure. Senator Nelson. No?
I didn't have a question.
Oh, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, something I find fascinating is a large part of the discussion in this committee when it came to the tobacco tax was that if we tax something higher, we'll get less of it. And people thought that, you know, taxing cigarettes, taxing tobacco at a higher level is a good way to discourage smoking. Yet when we start talking about taxing estates or taxing income or these things, there's a strong desire by a lot of people to say the elasticity is zero, that people will not react to those taxes. And that just doesn't stand to reason. As Senator Gazelka correctly pointed out, it takes some time after all these income tax increases that we put into the state didn't go into effect on, back in 2009. It was a couple years ago that was passed. And it takes some time, but I think we have to be fair. Okay, I'm one who opposed the increase in the tobacco tax, but I am intellectually honest enough to admit that if you tax tobacco at a higher level, it'll discourage smoking. Well, I think those who believe in higher income taxes, higher estate taxes, I ask for the intellectual honesty to admit, yep, we will drive some people out of the state. We don't know what the elasticity is. We don't know how strong the effect will be. But to say the effect will be zero is disingenuous. That which we tax, we get less of. That which we subsidize, we get more of. And much of the discussion in this committee on other topics is how can we use the tax code to influence people's behavior. So to say that it's not going to influence people's behavior or likely wouldn't in this area makes no sense, especially with people who generally have the means to leave if they want.
Very good. Senator Dietzick. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman and members, I would still rather be in charge and have control over the weather.
Anything else, members?
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I see you're going to new testifiers. I'll wait till the end of the testifiers.
Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen. Ms. Madden, Ms. Connery, and then Ms. Schubach. Oh.
Schubach.
Got the names are wrong on this list also. Well, come on up, folks, and introduce yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about some concerns we have about these bills and others that would make significant cuts to the estate tax this year. And while the two bills before you right now, I think, raise our largest concerns, my comments also apply to some degree to the previous bill and other bills that would make large cuts to the estate tax. Three primary concerns that we have are, first, these bills would reverse some of the progress we've been making towards a more even distribution of taxes in Minnesota. Secondly, it creates an unlevel playing field among Minnesota taxpayers. And then third, the cost of this bill also presents some concern about crowding out other priorities. So the first concern is that further large cuts to the estate tax will reverse some of our recent progress in making our tax system less regressive. The tax bills that were passed in 2013 and 2014, taken together, have made the distribution of state and local taxes in Minnesota more even across income levels. The share of income that the highest income Minnesotans pay in state and local taxes has gotten closer to what low and middle income Minnesotans pay. But it is still the case that the highest income Minnesotans pay a smaller share of their incomes on Minnesota taxes. These bills would cut taxes for a small number of the largest estates and benefit primarily high income individuals, and that would reopen the gap between high income Minnesotans and everyone else in terms of how much of their incomes they pay in state and local taxes. And we think that's not the right direction for the state. Second concern is that the estate tax plays an important role in providing a level playing field among taxpayers, and that's because the estate tax serves as a kind of a backstop to the income tax and applies to the increased value of assets, such as stocks, but other kinds of assets that have appreciated and that that appreciation would otherwise not be taxed. The more we erode the estate tax, the more that capital gains can go untaxed. So, for example, if I get a $10,000 raise, I will pay income tax on that increased income. If I buy a stock and it appreciates in value by $10,000 and I sell that stock, I will pay taxes on that income. But if I can hold on to that stock, I don't need that money to meet my expenses, and I can pass it along in my estate, that $10,000 of capital gains may never be taxed. And so that creates a tax preference that's not available to Minnesotans with incomes only from wages or only from capital gains they realize during their lifetime. This issue of capital gains is a substantial function of the estate tax. And research on estates nationally finds that unrealized capital gains make up a large portion of the assets in estates. Unrealized capital gains make up about one-third of estates worth between $5 and $10 million and are 55% of the value of estates worth more than $100 million. The third concern is the cost of these bills, which is $157 million for 16-17 and $178 million in the next biennium. These cuts come on top of the cuts to the estate tax passed last year. And while it's certainly true that the state is in a stronger financial situation this year after more than a decade of frequent deficits, I question whether large cuts in the estate tax for a small number of estates should take priority over other choices that would have a greater impact on Minnesotans across the state. Such as sustainably funding services for people with disabilities and the elderly, making childcare and higher education more affordable, or passing a more broadly based tax cut in this committee. I think just to speak a minute to the issue of where the exemption level is landing, that seems to be the major focus of the testimony so far. And so I would suggest if that is the primary issue, that you look at other changes within the estate tax so that we're not having such a large financial impact and providing such large cuts for the larger estates that would still be subject to the tax. Finally, I also want to just touch on the issue about migration, tax migration. There is a body of research nationally looking at these issues that excuse me, that finds that the impact of estate tax policies on where people choose to live is relatively modest. I certainly would not argue that it is zero, but if you look at the research, I don't think it suggests that it's a big enough factor that it should be the primary concern driving our tax policy. And certainly the research suggests that the revenue gained by keeping a small number of households from moving is smaller than the amount of revenue lost from eliminating or substantially cutting the estate tax. So I don't think these kinds of cuts pay for themselves. I also wonder if maybe some of the results that Mr. Nelson, excuse me, alluded to in the difference between federal returns, federal estate tax returns from states with and without estate tax might be explained in part by the federal deductibility of state estate tax. That might be something to look into with more detail. So thank you for the opportunity to express these concerns.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. Questions, members?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Madden, do you have I recall some studies regarding the tax migration, and you might, if you have those available, at one point it showed if there were one family who moved to another state because of, well, for whatever reasons, we're assuming maybe tax reasons, but there could be others, in the upper tax bracket, how many average taxpayers would it take to replace the amount of income, the revenue to the state that would leave with that one taxpayer in the upper bracket. Do you recall the study that I'm talking about? I might have to go back and dig that up. But it showed that there needed to be so many other taxpayers to meet the same amount of state revenue as the one taxpayer who left at the upper income. Do you recall that study?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I'm not familiar with that particular study. The studies I've seen do indicate that it is lower and middle income families that are more likely to move overall than high income. Those folks tend to move where job opportunities are available and sometimes are a little more mobile. But I can also share with you, I don't have it with me, but I can share with you the research I've seen that suggests that the revenue you lose by doing substantial estate tax cuts is not made up for by the amount of taxes those families would pay if you retain them.
Mr. Chair.
Well, could let's get through the testimony, sure. Senator Nelson. Who would like to go first, next? Mr. Smith?
Chairman Scoy, members of the committee, I'm Dane Smith, president of Growth and Justice, and we're an organization that conducts research and advocates for a broader prosperity in Minnesota, and especially for public investments in human capital and physical infrastructure that we know are conducive to long-term private sector growth. We are very encouraged to see some rather amazing, robust business growth in Minnesota recently, and also to see increasingly bipartisan and ideological consensus around the fact that there is not enough equity in that growth. Rather, there's an overwhelming evidence of growing economic and racial inequality in our state and nation, in income, but even larger disparities in accumulated wealth. There's pretty broad agreement now that growth and wealth is not being shared in anywhere nearly an equitable fashion, as equitable as it used to be at least. And this is reinforced by news recently that the top 1% globally would soon have more than half of the world's wealth. Excuse me. There is a continuing evidence from Minnesota business press that middle-income wage earners are still seeing little gain despite soaring profits and job growth. And our own research at Growth and Justice in 2013 showed that Minnesota inequality is worsening over time at a faster rate than other states, although we're still not quite as unequal as other states and the nation as a whole. The report showed a steep decline during the recession in median income, an increase in the poverty rate, overall inequality, as measured by the classic formula known as the Gini coefficient. In this context, we really urge that you keep estate tax reductions, if you do them at all, to a minimum. We think a policy of doing no further harm to our inequality situation is a good principle in both tax policy and on the appropriation side. Taxes are not the only and probably not even the most important factor in growing state and economic and global inequality. There's family structure, there's capital chasing cheap labor overseas, trade policy, outsourcing, immigration, the technology revolution and automation, all of these may play a more important part. But tax policy certainly is a factor in inequality, and declining effective rates at the top for income, capital, and wealth over the last 30 years have to be considered as contributors to this inequality. Large reductions in the estate tax, unless they are replaced from other sources that are progressive in incidence, will almost certainly exacerbate inequality and erase the gains against regressivity documented in our latest tax incidence study. We don't oppose any and all tax cuts. We support increases in credits and deductions for child care, the renter's credit for early childhood education, various other forms of relief for middle and low-income families, especially if they can somehow be targeted to education and training and improving capital, which is Minnesota's formula for economic growth. We don't want to become a cold Florida. We could actually further move the needle on inequality if some or much of the proposed cuts in estate taxes were extended instead to these hundreds of thousands of folks who are actually working hard but struggling to make ends meet and to build equity and wealth for themselves in our state. We know there's strong bipartisan support for that kind of relief for working households who are unlikely to ever have multi-million dollar estates to leave to their heirs, but who stand a better chance of doing so if we give them and their children and their heirs a little bit more equity now. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. I think we'll finish up with the testimony and then have questions. Mr. Connery.
Connery. Yeah. Chairman Skoy, members of the committee, my name is Chris Connery. I'm here today for Take Action Minnesota. We're a statewide grassroots advocacy organization with over 15,000 members and supporters in every Senate district in the state. I'm here today to raise our concerns about Senate File 743 and the range of estate tax cuts being proposed today. Thanks to the work of this committee over the last few years, the state's tax code has become more fair and our state's tax revenue has become more adequate. We applaud you for this work. And believe that it set our state in a positive direction. The proposals before you today would reverse this direction by significantly weakening one of the only two progressive taxes the state administers. In fact, last year's estate tax cuts had a negative impact on our tax system, moving the suits index measurably in the wrong direction. The 2015 tax incidence study identified last year's estate tax cuts as one of the two recent tax policy changes with the most regressive impact on our tax code overall. If tax cuts are a priority for the committee this year, we'd urge you to think of lower and middle income families in Minnesota. There are progressive tax cut options in the form of expansions of the renter's credit, the working family credit, and the child and dependent care credit, and we hope you'll keep these options and these families in mind as you make your decisions. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Connery. Ms. Schubach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jennifer Schaubach. I am the legislative director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO. We are a labor organization with over 1,000 affiliated unions with representing over 300,000 working men and women throughout the state. Thank you for allowing me to, as everybody here has already said, so eloquently express our concerns for the estate tax bills that are before you today. I will try to avoid duplicating anything that was already said regarding the estimates for the fiscal impact just for the bills that were passed last year on the estate tax, reducing the collections by in 17 by almost 30%, and this bill making an additional $157 million in cuts in the upcoming biennium. We talk a lot about the budget surplus as if it's a kind of like a bottomless pot of money. However, when you look at the other serious needs we have facing our state, our infrastructure, education, long-term care, et cetera, and other cuts as our tax credits that were mentioned here to help struggling, working middle-class families. With these not showing up on the spending side of our budget, they can be very deceiving, I think, and don't think that that's an appropriate way to balance our budget or move things forward on our budget. Again, we encourage you to do the least amount of harm. Senator Rest's request kind of at the beginning of the hearing regarding kind of policy the best policy or the, best working policy. I actually conferred with Jeff Van Wyken in the back there because that's not kind of, I haven't dug through the policy, but ironically, I don't know if she asked that because it was two of your bills, actually, Senator Rest, Senate File 837, in which the cost is all up front and there are no tails. We see that as a good policy and not, things increasing as it goes out. And Senate File 881 is another good one if it makes more sense or a more sensible way to apportion the tax. We would be amenable to that. Thank you for your time. And
thank you, Ms. Schaubach. And we will take into account the one-time nature of some of the monies that is counted as the budget surplus because it is not all ongoing and not all eligible for some kind of ongoing spending or tax relief. Very good point. Questions, members? Seeing none, thank you all. Thank you all very much. And
Mr. Chair?
Senator Nelson, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to draw the committee's attention to two letters that I think were in your packet or handed out today, and that is from the Farm Bureau and from Minnesota Farmers Union in support of Senate File 743 and Senate File 198. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Anyone else wish to testify on Senate File 743 and 198? Seeing none, anything else, members?
Chair?
Senator
Sanjam. Chair, thank you. Excellent hearing, by the way, this morning. Thank you. I'm sitting here thinking about this thing called regressivity and the testimony. And as I recall Ms. Allen talking about her operation, what to me is really regressivity is if she and her brother were to fold their operation up today, tomorrow, 43 people would be out of a job, and that's regressivity, and that's real, and I don't think we can forget that side of this discussion either.
Anything else, members? Seeing none, Chair will lay Senate File 743 over for possible inclusion. Chair will lay Senate File 198 over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Senator Coonan, Senate File 577. Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this bill does is reduce the period for inclusion of gifts in taxable estates and reduces that look back from 3 years to 1 year. And so in current law, taxable gifts made by the decedent within 3 years of the decedent's death are included in the taxable estate. This is for the taxable gifts made after June 30th in 2013. And this was put in place in 2013 when changes were made in Minnesota's estate tax. What this bill does is reduce the look-back period to 1 year. Only taxable gifts made within 1 year of death would be included in the decedent's taxable estate, and it gives taxpayers more flexibility in gift-making decisions. And this bill makes this effective for estates beginning in tax year 2015. And so, Mr. Chair, that's the bill.
Senator Coonan, so your goal here is to change the look back ongoing from 3 years to 1 year.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Coonan, does the federal government have a look back period on their gifts? That's the part I wasn't 100% sure about.
Right. And
Senator Coonan.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazalka, I'm going to refer to counsel for that. This bill was sent to me from the House, so I haven't done a lot of work on this, but I'm going to ask counsel answer to that question.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazalka, there is a look-back period. I just want to make sure that I get the time right. I think it might be 3 years, but I'll look and verify.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator
that's
Gazalka.
Why I was hoping to have the accountant. I think they would know it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, did he leave?
No.
Doesn't know.
Okay.
Ms. Pollack will get the answer to us.
Thank you.
Anything else, members? Pretty straightforward. Anyone else wish to testify on Senate File 577? Seeing nothing else, thank you, Senator Coonan. Chair will lay Senate File 577 over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest. Senator Rest, do you have a preference? about which one you would do first. We were just talking about the three-year look back, and you have a bill
we can
dealing with that also.
That
should
one.
We start with that one?
Do with that one.
Senate File 837.
First. What, 837. Mr. Chairman and members, what Senate File 837 does is to delay the look back until 2016, and then essentially gets rid of it, and I think that's about as straightforward as I can be. So it takes it out of contention, of consideration in the impact of the for Minnesota of the gift tax on to be included in one's estate. So it delays it for, we have a three-year now. Senator Coonan's bill reduced that to 1 year, and mine delays it to 2016. And it had been effective for taxable gifts made after June 30th, and people were getting caught in that, having to still respond to that tax imposition, even though in last year's bill we repealed the gift tax. So we're just trying to have a retroactive provision that relieves those taxpayers from the gift tax just like others. And I don't know that it's anything in a way more complicated than that. And the issue had, I think, been talked about among tax committee members, and I certainly heard about it from the CPAs as well. So I think, Senator Coonan's bill takes one step. I think we should take the whole step. And I don't think it's the revenue estimate is, it's not negligible, and it's certainly more than the one-year one, but I think this is something we should get rid of. And for the biennium, it's about $12 million.
Questions of Senator Rest?
And it's not a matter of Senator whether Rest. We should have an estate tax. It's just providing equity within the system. That's the point of it.
Senator Rest, Mr. Sampson has joined you.
He's here for the
other bill?
Distribution of the income.
Anything else, members, for Senator Rest on the look back? Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, just to verify the response on Senator Gazelka's question, the federal estate tax look back is 3 years.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Ms. Chair and Ms. Pollack. If you can check too, on a part of what I was trying to work through is with the federal government, you can set aside money ahead of time, pre-death, up to that $5 million or whatever the number is. And so that's what I was trying to work through. What is that look-back period for? Because you can choose ahead of time, to give away assets up to the dollar amount that the estate tax exemption would be. And so I'm trying to figure out how does that three-year look back, what exactly is that dealing with?
And Senator Gazelka, so are you asking about the, I think it's now $15,000 or $16,000 annual exclusion?
I believe it's above that amount, Mr. Chair.
And then there's
under
a
that.
One-time
yeah.
exclusion?
Yeah, that's correct.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, if I'm understanding your question correctly, the gift tax exclusion amount is $14,000 per recipient per year. Taxable gifts are gifts that are above that $14,000. So taxable gifts made within 3 years of the date of death would be included in the taxable estate.
Okay. But, Mr. Chair and Ms. Pollack, you can designate ahead of time those gifts towards the estate tax amount. Unless the law changed.
Senator Gazelka and Ms. Pollack, is the question, I think it's allowed, that you can use your one-time exclusion at any time. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying, Senator
Gazelka? Yes, so, Mr. Chair, I was trying to figure out what is the look-back exactly doing, but so, but at least we know that they're Minnesota and the federal government are allowing them.
Yeah.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, sorry for the confusion on this. So the exclusion amount would include all portions of the taxable estate and taxable gifts. So to the extent that any gifts that are taxable are made within 3 years of the date of death, those are included in the exclusion amount. And so they would not be taxed.
Thank you.
Okay.
Anything else, members? Senator Ress?
Nothing further.
Chair Lay, Senate File 837, over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Ress. Senator Ress, Senate File 881.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 881 was also suggested by a constituent and also by the State Bar Association, and it has to do with in an estate where there's a Q-tip, that's a common kind of trust that is set up.
Right.
If there is a second marriage and a second spouse that has an estate that then becomes, and then the spouse dies. So let's say it's a husband and wife, and then the first wife dies, second marriage occurs, and then the husband dies, but the wife brings into their total resources an estate itself. If there's a Q-tip, then absent any explicit instructions, and you're going to correct me here, explicit instructions about who gets what, you could have a situation that the estate that was not part of the Q-tip ends up paying part of the estate taxes to which it had contributed nothing. And so what this bill does is to set up an apportionment of the estate taxes that recognizes that $1 million that's being brought in by a second marriage spouse does not become part of the Q-tip, so that, let's say it was, again, the wife, the second wife, she dies, that her heirs are not paying taxes on the Q-tip estate that was then bequeathed to her husband's heirs. So it's kind of trying to really establish that there's apples and oranges here, and that it in this particular proposal, and we can discuss the fairness of it all and whether you think this is a good change, but it doesn't have any impact on how much tax is owed on the whole estate, just who pays the tax. And so that is what this is. The bill is attempting to establish a different policy than that which exists right now. But always the decedents in their wills can determine who gets what and so forth. So it's not an automatic. You still can determine the beneficiaries of your estate. So I do have a representative from the probate section of the bar and would like to have him give further information about the bill.
And Senator Ress, just so I think I understand, this has no general fund fund impact at all.
It has no fiscal impact at all. The revenue note estimate is zero. It is just determining how the liability is going to be assessed, not the amount of the liability.
And it's for when there are no directions by the decedent as to which, if we're going to put a mechanism in place to determine who pays the inheritance tax.
So right. Members, it, if you can, it only applies to those trusts. It only applies to those trusts in which there is no instruction about how the taxes are to be divided.
So, members, as we listen to Mr. Sampson. Mr. Sampson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. This is in part a historical glitch that got it into the statute because the federal tax law was changed over many, many years, and Minnesota's law was changed to respond to part but not all of those federal changes. So let me just give you a quick tour of the statute in front of you. The Q-tip trust that we're talking about, that's
Mr.
the heart.
Mr. Sampson, could you give your name for the
sure,
record?
I'm sorry. Yes, Michael Sampson. I'm a partner at Maslin LLP in Minneapolis and the chair of the Probate and Trust Law Section Legislative Committee this year at
Thank
the Bar
you.
Association. Sorry. The Q-tip trust that we were talking about is a common planning vehicle, especially in second or subsequent marriage estates where the first spouse to die wants to leave his or her assets for the benefit of his or her surviving spouse for life, but doesn't want to give the property to that surviving spouse and mm-hmm. possibly his or her kids later, mm-hmm. would rather say, I'll let you have the income from my property for the rest of your life, honey, but when you die, the money will go back to my kids. And you can do whatever you want with your property, but my money is going to go back to my kids at the second death. This tax trust was introduced into the federal tax code in 1981. And in 1997, they created a statute called 2207A, which is referred to in the bill on line 2.33 on page 2. And what the Bar Association proposed back then was to say we should make a rule that says if you don't expressly refer to and opt out of 2207A, then you'll get the general rule. Otherwise, 2207A will apply. And many of those trusts that were created after 1981 but before 1997, those people didn't have a chance to make a specific reference to a statute that didn't exist. So what they got was the default rule, which was what we call proportional tax allocation. You figure out how much each beneficiary is receiving of the total, and they bear that proportionate share of the total tax liability. The alternative in 2207A, which is what our proposal would make the default for Minnesota taxpayers with these Q-tip trusts, would be marginal tax apportionment. So just to give you an example, if the first spouse, the husband, died with a $5 million trust for his spouse, created a Q-tip trust for his wife, and she had $1 million of her own, and then she subsequently dies, if all she had in her estate was $1 million, she would pay no tax at all, no federal tax or Minnesota tax, because her $1 million is under the limit for both federal and state. But because of the way the tax law works, that Q-tip trust is included in her estate as well. She can't control where it goes. She can't change anything about it. But it's subject to tax in her estate. And so with a $6 million estate, she would owe $508,000 of Minnesota taxes. And that $508,000 would be apportioned ratably now under Minnesota law, 17% to her kids, because they're getting 17% of the total, and 83% to the husband's kids. So her kids would pay $86,000 for the privilege of her husband's kids inheriting $5 million. What we're proposing is that her estate would be allocated no tax, because without the Q-tip trust, she would have paid no tax. And the Q-tip trust would be allocated the marginal or additional tax attributable to that trust, which is all of it in this case, $508,000. So that at the end of the day, the husband's kids would get $4.5 million, versus $4.49 million, right? They would get slightly less, and her kids would get slightly more. As you say, it doesn't change the amount of the tax. It's purely an apportionment rule. But if you consider the estate tax a tax on the privilege of giving property to people of your choosing, she doesn't have the choice of deciding where this Q-tip trust goes. So she shouldn't have, and her kids shouldn't have to pay the tax on it. That was sort of our idea. And the default rule then becomes the one that we think most taxpayers would want. If they don't want that, they can opt out of it.
Mr. Stampson, so if the wife's estate was over the exclusion, so there would be some estate tax paid, mm-hmm. would the estate tax be then done proportional to?
Right. You would figure out the tax on her estate by itself, and that would be allocated to her family, and then you would figure out the tax on the combined the estate plus the Q-tip, and the difference would be apportioned to the Q-tip trust beneficiaries.
Senator Rest.
So if the wife had an estate of $10 million and then there was a $5 million Q-tip, her heirs would pay tax on the $10 million estate but not on the $5 million Q-tip.
Exactly.
It's not getting, it's not avoiding mm-hmm. or being excused from the tax. It is simply dividing the two instruments that would determine who the beneficiaries are. It doesn't excuse people from the tax, but unless they would otherwise be excused anyway.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, I'm assuming then the Q-tip was set up after the death of the first spouse.
Exactly.
So had it been
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Had it been set up before the death of the first spouse, you know, so that they wanted to make sure that assets went to their children or some form of trust, if that had been the case, would that be drawn into the new relationship and the tax consequences? Does that make sense to you, what I'm trying to say?
Mr. Sampson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, the only trust that would be affected by this proportionate rule that we're talking about is a Q-tip trust. A Q-tip trust is a trust where one spouse contributes money to it for the benefit of another spouse, and they claim a marital deduction for it. So if you didn't pay tax on the first transfer, then the deal with the government is then you have to pay tax on the second.
Mr. Chair, the only reason I was asking is I wanted to make sure there wasn't a situation where you ended up paying it twice. So thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to clarify. So the Senator Rest bill then would change the taxation treatment, not currently. It's based upon the order of death, who dies first. And this bill would change that taxation treatment based upon how the assets are apportioned to the estate. Is that correct?
Mr. Sampson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson.
Not exactly.
I hear someone saying not exactly in my ear. Clearly, the order of deaths is always relevant to the payment of tax, especially when you're using a marital deduction vehicle like a Q-tip trust to defer the payment of tax till the second death. Mm-hmm. A very sort of estate planning 101 type of plan is to say, let's send all the property to the surviving spouse and wait to pay estate taxes until the second death. So, yes, the order of deaths is relevant, but if the wife were the one who died first, created a trust for her spouse, or frankly just left her $1 million to her own kids and let the husband with his $5 million live on that for the rest of his life, his kids would pay tax on the $5 million. Her kids would get her $1 million tax-free. And so why should the result be the opposite if they die out of order, so to speak?
Exactly.
Husband dies first. Is that what you were getting at?
Yep.
Yes.
Thank you.
Anything else, members? Anyone else wish to testify on Senate File 881? Anything else, Senator Rest?
No, sir.
Thank you. Chair will lay Senate File 881 over for possible inclusion. Thank you. My bills are next, so we'll Senator Restall, Chair.
Last two bills on the agenda are Senator Scoy's.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Which one do you want to take up first?
I have Senate File 1055.
Okay. We'll take up 1055, which is also dealing with estate tax. Senator Scoy, you want to explain, and I understand you have an amendment that you'd like to offer.
Yes, Madam Chair. We have the A1 amendment.
The Senator Scoy offers the A1 amendments, an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senator Franson, in three of the previous bills, included this provision in their bills. She talked about the portability component with regard to estate taxes. This would allow the living spouse to receive the exclusion of the deceased spouse. We are looking for a final revenue estimate from the department, and that will be a somewhat determining factor as to how far we're able to move forward with this. But
Senator Scoy, do you have any preliminary idea of what the impact of it is at all?
It just says estimate pending.
Oh, okay.
And so, members, I'd like this to be part of our conversation with regard to estate taxes this year. Clearly, it's been in front of the committee already today. I didn't realize that was going to be the place or going to be the case when I drafted the Senate file, but I am interested in including portability and trying to the federal government does have portability in their estate tax provision.
Senator Scoy, could you bring the microphone a little bit closer?
The federal government does have portability in their provisions, and I'm looking forward to Minnesota to try to follow along with that provision, and hence Senate File 1055.
Any questions for Senate File on Senate File 1055? What it's moving toward? Guess not, then. If not, then the chair lays over Senate File 1055 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. The last bill is Senate File 554, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 554 has also been part of the conversation earlier this morning. This is a bill that would add an adjustment to the farm and small business exclusion to bring that in line with where the current federal exclusion is. That the federal exclusion has an inflationary adjustment on it, and we would be catching our exclusion up with the federal exclusion.
So this is a updating to that. To the federal exclusion, is
yes,
that correct?
Madam Chair and members, there is a revenue estimate for this. It's $60,000 for 2016, $100,000 for 2017, and about $100,000 thereafter.
Ms. Pollack, with regard to 1055, you had a comment that might help us about the portability provisions. I wonder if you'd share that with us, please.
Madam Chair and members, I would draw your attention to in Senate File 1055, portability between spouses is provided, but that would be portability among the existing Minnesota estate tax structure, so the qualified farm and small business subtraction and the general exclusion amount.
Okay. On 554, it's just an increase in the amount. right?
Just an increase in amount, Ms. Chair.
Revenue estimate is what? Oh, six. For 554, it has a very minimal impact. Any questions, or is anybody who wants to testify on Senate File 554? Seeing none, the chair will lay over Senate File 554 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Today is Tuesday. We have a division meeting tomorrow and the full committee meeting on Thursday.
If I can make a comment before we adjourn.
Oh, yeah, I was going to call on him, too. If you don't mind, I'll call on him first. Okay. Senator Skoy, that's just the schedule coming up, but Senator Skoy.
Yes, members, and on Thursday we are going to have the energy bill that we've been working on this year. That was introduced last week. We have had some conversations with the stakeholders, and it doesn't appear that anybody really hates it, so I think there's some hope. But we're going to have a good discussion about energy on Thursday morning, and then the following week we'll be meeting on Tuesday and Thursday.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Skoy in particular, I want to thank you for bringing the bills forward today that we're talking about. I think at the end of the day, it's maybe not the most popular thing to do, to talk about. But I think the most compelling argument is hearing from the people in the fields, accounting, financial planners, attorneys. We know something is happening. And at the end of the day, I think even though this initially there's revenue notes that say it's a cost, at the end of the day, I think it's a big win for Minnesota. The people that we're trying to encourage to stay here are the people that they're paying the taxes, but they're also the people that volunteer and give money to charities. And, so I want to thank you personally for not being afraid to talk about these issues, even though they're not always the most popular ones to talk about. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka. I think there's no further business before the committee. We stand adjourned.